You're listening to Kira's Pink Sparkle Pod. Kira's Pink Sparkle Pod.
And welcome to the next sparkly episode of Kira's Pink Sparkle Pod podcast. Today, I'm thrilled to be joined by the Good Morning Britain chief correspondent, Richard Gaisford.
Oh, Kira, it's lovely to be with you. Thank you very much for inviting me onto your wonderful podcast.
Oh, well, thank you very much for saying yes. Right, let's get started with the questions. Right, first question for you is, when you were growing up, what job or career did you want to have?
Oh, I think that when I look back to my earliest memories, I probably wanted to be a pilot when I was very young. Okay. Because then I knew that it was an exciting thing to be able to fly around the world and see different places and different things. But as I got a bit older and I realised, firstly, I had to wear glasses. My eyesight wasn't so good.
Right.
And also, I wasn't so good at maths and science, that perhaps that wasn't the career for me. So very quickly, I knew that I'd be doing something else. And my father was working in television news at the time. In fact, from the very moment I was born, he was working in television. And I used to go up to the BBC for birthday treats and go and tour the studios. And I knew that was an exciting world. Yeah. And as I saw him traveling with work and seeing the world and seeing stories around the world, I thought that was an interesting thing to think about. And eventually that's what I ended up doing. And I did it because I really like telling stories. And I was very lucky when I was 14, I was able to go to my local hospital and work on hospital radio. And they helped me very much there, taught me so much. And that experience allowed me to get work at the bottom of the ladder and work my way up. And that's what I've done.
Great. Fantastic. Yeah, I sometimes get to go to the BBC News studios with my work with charity Mencap, as I'm a media spokesperson for them. So occasionally I get to go and visit the BBC myself. So yes, I've seen the magic there myself.
No, it's exciting. And when you're very young and you go and you see, at the time it was John Noakes presenting Blue Peter, and you met Noel Edmonds presenting the Multicoloured Swap Shop, and you saw John Craven and all those people, it was quite something. So I was very lucky, and it gave me an insight. And I think that's the most important thing, is to get as much insight as you can into so many different worlds, and then you can decide what you want to do.
Definitely, totally. That's a great answer. Thank you. So you are currently chief correspondent for Good Morning Britain. How long have you done that job role for now?
Okay, so I've been at Good Morning Britain. It's very difficult, this, because we've had a few name changes along the way.
Okay.
So back in February of 2000, on Valentine's Day, on February 2000, I started working for what was called GMTV.
Yep.
And before that, I'd been working at something called London Tonight, which was the regional news programme on ITV. And even before that, I was in the West Country doing a similar job for the ITV station down there. But in February of 2000, I joined GMTV as a correspondent. And very quickly was sent off all over the place doing stories. And in 2003, I went off to Iraq and reported on the war and did so much so quickly there. And in 2005, my good friend and colleague, it was a guy called Alan Fisher, who was the chief correspondent, he left. And that made a vacancy. Mm-hmm. And they said that I could have his job. So I became chief correspondent.
Amazing.
So since then, that's a good 16 years. It's amazing, isn't it? I've been getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning mostly.
Wow.
For 21 years now. Amazing. It's a long time.
Yeah, definitely. I actually have met some of your other colleagues. I've met Ranveer Singh. I was invited to a diversity event at ITV with my work a few years ago, and she was actually presenting the event. So yes. I met Ranveer, and she's very lovely. So I supported her on Strictly. I was reading her on Strictly when she was on it. So yeah, she's very lovely.
She did very well.
Yeah, she did.
Very well.
Yes.
And do you fancy that? Do you fancy going on Strictly yourself?
Actually, I've got a campaign running. I have, yeah. So I am a person who has a learning disability, and I think it's really great that Strictly have had Paralympians on. Last year they had JJ Chalmers, who'd obviously been in the forces, and obviously he had some kind of disability. So I have said, wouldn't it be great if they could be more diverse and actually have people with a learning disability or people with other disabilities and conditions on the show and push that kind of agenda?
I agree with you.
Wouldn't it be amazing?
I think it would be amazing. And I think, you know, one of the things that I know ITV is doing, and the event you went to probably was part of this, was about making diversity not just about race and gender, but widening the field so that everybody has a chance to be represented on screen and in the workforce as well. And I think that's a really important thing. So you're right. I think the BBC need to listen to you. And even if it's not you, and that would be a lovely thing if it were, but somebody that was able to take part and to showcase themselves in that kind of format would be a wonderful thing.
Yes. Actually, I'm a patron of a fantastic dance charity called Dance Syndrome, and they're made up of dancers who all have different disabilities, and we're trying at the moment to get them an opportunity to perform on Strictly. So we have been talking to the BBC to try and get the opportunity recently. Whether it will happen this year or next year, we don't quite know yet. We're waiting to hear back. But even if it's just them for now, I think that would be amazing, and I can always go on it in the future. So I am talking to the BBC. I know Miranda Wayland, who is their diversity person. So I've been having kind of chats with her. So we'll see what happens next.
Well, it's very exciting. I think it would be a great thing to see you doing that. Very much so.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you a question. Yes. Am I allowed to ask you
a
question?
Yes, go.
Because you talk about featuring people with learning disabilities, and I struggle, I think, to know exactly what the official definition of a learning disability is. Okay. Can you tell me?
Yes. So a learning disability, I would say, for me, it's a condition that starts just before birth, during birth, after birth. It's lifelong, so you have it all your life. There's no cure. Everybody's different. So someone could have a mild learning disability and might just need a little bit of support now and then. Someone might have a more moderate learning disability, so they might need a few hours support a week to do the things they need and want to do. Someone might have a severe learning disability, and that also might mean they might also have a physical disability. They might also have a profound disability, and that might mean they can't speak or they can't use verbal ways of communicating. But we still say that as long as they have good support around them, good decisions can be made about their lives with the people who love them and support them. And we say they're still people, they should still be heard. So I would say learning disability is a huge umbrella. There's a huge spectrum. I'm on the mild end. It started for me at the age of 10. I was thrown out of my mainstream school at the age of 10 because the school just didn't know how to teach me. They didn't know what support to give me. They didn't know what a learning disability is. And, you know, it wasn't their fault. It wasn't deliberate, but just there were so many problems. Everything was going wrong. Nothing was going right. And so then I was then assessed for support by my local authority. And between my family and me and my local authority, we decided the best next thing for me was to go to a special needs school. Now, there is a huge conversation debate going on about mainstream education versus special education and inclusion. I do preach inclusion. I do think it's important to include children altogether. but the school has to provide good support, enabling that child to succeed and to achieve.
And do you think that things have got better?
Slowly. Slowly. Not enough in my personal view. Not in my work view. I feel schools try. They think about it. They try to do it. But it's actually a lot of children I know, parents I know, they are still having struggles with the schools that their children are at. So the problem hasn't gone away. The problem is still there. I think it really starts, awareness starts at school age. So when a child goes to school, that's when they learn about differences, diversity, awareness, being different. That child will then grow up to know that actually everybody, we're all different. We all have some kind of disability. Everybody has some kind of thing they can't do in their lives. We're all different. We're all not perfect. you know, I just think I was with my dad the other day and I was trying to explain something to my dad and he was like, I'm not getting you. And I was like, well, if you're not getting me and you're not understanding, it just shows, doesn't it? Like, we all have things we don't understand. And I just think if schools really try to put in place support, resources, reasonable adjustments, which means changes, adaptable changes to suit that child, then that child can grow up and develop in that mainstream school with the right support all the way through their life. Sadly, we know that obviously young children with a learning disability are twice as likely to be bullied because they have a disability. They're singled out. They're seen as different. Again, that school episode, its situation can happen, which is another barrier. So I think schools do have a lot to do, but I think from what I'm hearing, schools do really try. And I have met with the education minister myself. I've been to Parliament over this myself. I've gone and raised the message and awareness with them myself. And I think they do listen, but there are so many other big issues going on. Sadly, learning disability gets put to the back of the agenda. And we have a really hard job to influence when they have so many other things that they have to listen to. But I do really think things are changing, but very, 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 very slowly.
Well, it sounds to me like you're doing a lot of good work trying to raise awareness and trying to push change. That's brilliant. Thank you. I shouldn't be asking you the questions.
No,
I know.
No, that's fine. Honestly, this is a chat. Honestly, okay, see this excellent. As a chat. So, yeah, okay, please ask.
Perfect.
Great. Next question. I just laid up my next question. Okay. So, since you've been working for ITV and in your correspondent role, what is the funniest, happiest, or saddest story that you have covered?
Oh, my goodness me. I think actually, even in my first few days at working at GMTV, the boss, who is a guy called Martin Frizzell,
okay.
who is now the boss of This Morning, and he used to do my job as well. He used to be the right. chief correspondent at GMTV. He sent me out to the MI6 headquarters in London, okay. the spy headquarters,
okay.
Dressed as a Russian spy. and that was, I mean, that was a wake up call to me that life at in breakfast television wasn't going to be boring. That's for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
So that was quite funny. And that was in my first few days. I mean, you know, and since there's been so many things and sometimes things are unintentionally funny. Things happen and yeah. you find yourself in just the weirdest situations talking yeah. about the strangest things.
Yeah.
In terms of my saddest things I've done, I think probably some of the natural disasters that you go to. I mean, I remember the Boxing Day tsunami.
Right.
We flew into Thailand and went to Phuket, to the beaches where so many people had been washed away and lost their yeah. lives. And the sadness of walking down the street, seeing the pictures of all the children that were missing. Have you seen my child? Have you seen my baby? Have you seen, you know, my son, my daughter? That was something that will stay with me forever. And and as you walked through, we then went up to Indonesia and to Sumatra, there, the island that had been so badly affected. And there we saw, you know, the bodies of young children just lying in the streets. So those kind of things are very sad and deeply upsetting. I mean, it's a story where those natural disasters are strange, really, because often you'll go to a war and you'll know there's someone to blame.
Yeah.
But often in these in these natural disasters, there is nobody to blame. It's just something that's happened. Perhaps it is the fact that the buildings are so poor and there's little support. Yeah. But sometimes it's just the shock of everything that you see. And there can be shocking things.
Yeah. And what's like a really funny, what's a really funny story you've done?
Well, I'll tell you what, actually, you mentioned Happy. And I, can I tell you about Happy?
Yes.
Because I think there have been some really happy things. And one of the happiest things was back in 2010. Okay. Do you remember those miners in Chile who got stuck underground?
Yes.
And they had to go and dig them out. And it took weeks and weeks and weeks.
Yeah, I remember that.
So far down. I flew out with my colleague Rav to the middle of the Atacama Desert in Chile. And it's so far away from everywhere. It's incredible. And it's a place that gets super hot during the day and super cold at night. And we sat in that desert around these holes that had been dug with the families of these miners and press and media from all around the world. And we waited and we waited for these men to be brought up. And it wasn't clear that they were going to be brought up.
Right.
And they were in a very difficult position. It could have been the worst story.
Yeah.
And yet they managed to bring them up one by one.
I remember
over
that.
The course of a day or so, out of this little hole in the ground from all that way down underground. And that was the happiest moment, the cheers and the joy that went around there.
Yeah.
Just the most incredible thing.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how wonderful that was to be there. And it was intensified by the fact that it was such a strange environment to be in, the Atacama Desert in the middle of nowhere in Chile, in South America.
Yeah.
Surrounded by all these people from all around the world and the families of the miners. So I think that's probably one of the happiest things we've done.
Yeah, that was amazing. I remember that now. Now that you're saying that, I remember watching that going, surely there's no chance. And then suddenly it happened.
Yeah.
I remember just going, do you know what? Actually, things are there are miracles in this life, and that is a jolly well miracle. Like, yeah. I remember those stories. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I went out to Thailand for those poor boys, the football team that got stuck in the caves there.
Yeah, I remember that.
And it had a similar feel to it as well, just a few years ago, where really things weren't looking too good.
Yeah.
They got themselves stuck in a very difficult place, and getting to them and finding them in the first place was really hard.
Yeah.
But, you know, the human will is a strong thing, and people were really fighting for those boys and their coach, and they managed to get them out. I mean, quite incredible, really quite incredible.
It's amazing. You know, I look at the world now, and obviously we're all going through the coronavirus pandemic, and then obviously the G7's happening at the moment, and that's really current. And there's so many other big stories going on in the world, and you kind of think, I've been feeling a bit fed up. I think everybody else has, not just me, I hope. And I'm just like, wouldn't it be lovely if right now there was just a really lovely story break and it all just gives us a little bit of hope? Like right now, that would be lovely.
Yes. The news world is a funny thing. You get cycles of good and bad news. And sometimes you do feel that you're at the very bottom of the pits, don't you?
Yeah.
With all the doom and gloom. And then there's something that lifts you. So let's all pray that there is something that lifts us soon.
Please, Boris, on Monday. Please, Boris.
Oh, my goodness. I think you're going to be hoping just a bit too much there.
Oh,
I think it's going to be a little bit it's going to be a little bit difficult for the next few weeks and months.
Okay. I won't ask you if you know anything, I promise.
I don't know anything more than you know, Kira. But what I know is that with this pandemic, you can never judge what's going to happen.
Yeah.
There's always something that changes.
Yeah.
Always something that changes.
Yeah. Do you know what? Recently, I had my first hug with my mum in a year and a half. And I was like, no matter what happens next, I've had that. And that was the most special thing. Like, I don't want anything else now. Like, whatever happens next, whatever happens, I've had my mum hug. Like, I've missed her so much, and like being able to hug her, literally we cried, like happy tear cry, but like it was wonderful.
Well, listen, I think that, and yeah, it would have been amazing for your mum, right? I mean, yeah, your mum would have needed that as much as you needed that.
She cried as well. We were like, we were a complete mess. We were like, so yeah, I can't wait to have her around my flat more often now. Like, it's going to be great.
That's brilliant. Well, it does feel like things are getting back to normal a bit, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It really does.
Yeah. It does. Yeah. Have you been able to hug anybody? Like, have you been able to hug your family or?
Yes, I've been very lucky. In we've played by the rules as much as we possibly can, and I haven't seen my parents so much. It's been difficult. It's always hard anyway.
Yeah.
Because ordinarily, when we're all working and getting out there, it's difficult to always find the time.
Yeah.
My parents live about an hour and a half away from us.
Okay.
And so that makes it a bit more challenging. Yeah. But I have been able to see people. And we are starting to hug again, cautiously. Yay. It feels a bit strange though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Someone shook my hand the other day.
Yeah.
I know. I mean, someone shook my hand and I was thinking, oh, this is a bit strange. I haven't shaken your hand for a year and a half.
Yeah. I remember watching GMB, like the first day that you could hug someone. And then, like, I was watching Adele on GMB going, come on, Susanna, let's have a hug. Come on. And she was like, no.
Yes, well, I know, I can imagine. I think everyone's finding it just a bit strange, just getting back into this normal world, you know.
Definitely.
But we are getting there. We are getting there.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, next question I had. Okay, so what do you think about the new GB news channel starting?
Yeah, so it starts, well, I don't know when we're going to put this out, but it starts on Sunday the 13th at 8 o'clock in the evening.
Okay.
And I think everyone's going to be watching to see what they've done.
Yeah.
A lot of people we know in the business have gone there, you know, and they've gone to start this new thing, and they have an idea that they want to make it different and attract a new audience to news. And all of that is an amazing thing. So let's wait and see how it goes.
Yeah.
I think I've been involved in new television stations at the start. I'd started down at West Country back in 2003, when we started that new franchise for ITV down there. It was called West Country Television. And it's really hard. There's a huge amount of excitement. There's a great amount of camaraderie within the team.
Yeah.
You're all coming together to start something new, and that's wonderful. A lot of skills and people brought in from all over the place, people that haven't worked together, some people who know each other.
Yeah.
And then you go on air and you get some good response and quite a lot of criticism, and things technically don't always work because it's new systems.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, it's going to be hard for those guys.
Yeah.
And also, it's a commercial enterprise. You know, they are trying to make money. And making money out of news is really quite hard.
Yeah.
It's a very difficult thing.
Right.
There are some of the big American organizations that do it, and they have huge numbers of people viewing, because there's hundreds of millions of people out in the States and around the world that can watch. So for a channel that's aimed very much at Britain, where there's already really good news provision and good news channels, I think it's going to be interesting to see how it goes. You know, we wish them all the best, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it is for someone who enjoys watching news and appreciates being told new things, it's great to have just something else to watch as well.
Yeah.
So it's really good.
Definitely. Brilliant. Great. Thank you. Okay, I wanted to ask you, we've covered a couple of learning disability ones so far. So I know this is a good one. What do you think the media could do to make sure that people with a learning disability are equally represented in news stories and in the media?
Yeah, see, the word, when you say equally represented, it's really hard, because do you want to have it so that you've got percentages of people on screen that match percentages of people in the country? You know, if there's so many percent of people with learning disabilities, do they have to be on the television that amount of time? I think that gets quite difficult and quite tricky. And I don't think it particularly works in anyone's interests if you start counting and making it all about statistics.
Right.
I think what we need to do better is to reflect the stories that matter to everyone in the country, and to put people at the heart of those stories on the television and the radio and online, so that people get a much better understanding for themselves.
Yeah.
Sometimes you've said you've spoken to the education secretary yourself. You know, sometimes we hear from government ministers a lot. We hear from the unions about teaching, but we don't always hear from people on the on the grassroots. So hearing more from people who are in certain situations is really important. And I think that is something that we could all do so much better. Sometimes it's just quite easy to take the official line from the charity or from the government and to interview those people to get a response from someone that counters it. What we need to do more is to get on the ground, I think. But that's been quite hard over these last 2 years or 18 months of the pandemic. Getting to people, especially more vulnerable people, has been a really difficult thing.
I agree. You
know, Zoom has worked well, but you only really tell someone's story when I get to come and meet them. When I get to come and film them, you know, in their workplace or their home or where they're studying. So I think, you know, we've had a bit of a stop start over the last 18 months or so.
I agree.
ITV is very much driven, I know, through its ABLE network, very much driven to make sure that there's more inclusiveness on screen. So that I think that we will get better at that. And I think it's something that we can certainly work harder at over the next few years.
Do you know what I would love to do? I don't know if we can make this happen. I promise I won't be too cheeky. But I would love the opportunity to come on Good Morning Britain and talk about having a learning disability and what that means for me. I did that with Sky News 3 years ago, and I kind of was quite cheeky and got my way on there and made it happen. And I would love an opportunity with Good Morning Britain if it could happen.
Well, you know, I think the fact is that you're doing really well at the moment in your work. And the more that you do, the more people are aware of what you're doing. I think that the next time there's a story that's relevant to your experience and the expertise that you bring and the view that you can deliver, there's a really good chance that that could happen. I can't promise. I'm not the boss.
I know.
I would like to put people on the television all of the time. There's things that I would like to do and talk about, but that doesn't always happen. But I promise you, the more that you work, the more that you are networking as you are, and I see you online doing that, creating these networks, and that's a fabulous thing, the more chance you've got of being able to tell your story. And I know that your bosses must be pretty pleased with you, because I think that you're raising awareness really quite well of the issues that you want to talk about.
Yes, and actually, our chief executive, Adele Harris, it has been announced today that she's in the Queen's Honours. She's got an OBE. So, yeah, and then covering the news today for our chief exec. So, yeah.
Brilliant news for all that hard work. I think you'll be next. You'll be next.
I like the sound of Dame Kira, personally.
Yeah, I think it sounds perfect to me. It really does. It really does sound perfect.
Brilliant. Perfect. And then, so I was going to ask you as well, kind of what made you want to do journalism for your career? You kind of touched on it earlier, but kind of like, was there something that really touched you and you went, oh, I want to be a journalist or I want to be in the news? Was there something that really kind of inspired you to do it?
Yeah, I think it's just that everyone said, you keep asking questions, you know, and I was always interested. And I think if you're a journalist, you're interested in life, you're interested in people's stories, you're interested in the circumstances that people find themselves in. You can talk to anybody pretty much. You know, especially if you're a general news journalist like me, I'm not a specialist, really. I go off and tell the stories that people are talking about or you find on the front pages of your newspapers. And so, you know, from a very young age, people said, you keep talking. My teachers always said I talk too much. You know, I always ask too many questions. And, you know, and I think that that's the thing. So I knew pretty early on I was going to be an inquisitor and a storyteller. And I'm so lucky. I'm so lucky to have found a job that allows me to go out and do the things that I enjoy, to see the world, to be a part of some of these history-making events, to witness them firsthand, to be able to tell people, to have a wonderful program to work on, to see, you know, so many amazing things and people. Really quite a lucky thing for me. I mean, you know, I do feel blessed.
Brilliant. So is there anything else you'd like to ask me while you've got the opportunity?
Yeah, well, I just wanted to ask you what you see yourself, how your career progressing, because you've worked so hard. Do you think that you could be running that charity? Could you be the boss of Mencap?
One day, I'd like to see us change forever by having a chief exec with a learning disability. As much as I love Adele, and I really love Adele, I respect her dearly, and I've got to know her. I was actually on her interview panel when she came for the job, so I have to be nice about her. she's lovely anyway. But yeah, I really see MenCap as a learning disability charity. We've actually just launched our five-year big plan. It's on the website, so it's all public knowledge, and everything's on there now, thank God. I had to keep it down for a little while, which is so hard because it's so exciting.
Hard for you, isn't it? Because you like to tell everyone everything all the time.
I'm literally like, I'm a serial tweeter. Like, I'm literally like, today I'm doing, tomorrow I'm doing. But yeah, no, I think... In the big plan, we are saying we want it to be led by people with a learning disability. We want to give the microphone to people with a learning disability so they can tell their stories to us. We can hear them. That goes in the big plan. So at the moment, I'm actually talking to different groups of people with a learning disability and saying, tell me your experience, tell me your story, tell me what your hopes are, tell me what your dreams are, because we really want your voice in this big plan that we've just launched. And it's going to be over 5 years, so it's not going to end tomorrow. And so far, I've heard people saying, I want to learn to drive a car, I want to get married, I want to have children, I want to have a relationship, I want a job, I want a career. But they haven't been given those chances, and they have had low expectations given to them of them as people. And that breaks my heart. I'm like, I'm married. I've been married 8 years now. But when I first came to MenCap 19 years ago, I've worked for MenCap for 19 years now, 20 next year, and I was told when I first started, people with learning disabilities don't have relationships, they don't get married. And I was like, but I'm in a relationship. That just seems really awful. Why? And it's around capacity. So people don't think they understand what having a relationship means. They don't understand what getting married means. They won't have capacity to have children. They shouldn't have children. And actually, yes, everybody's different and everybody has their own needs, but it's about tailoring support to the individual as they are. And if someone has the right support, like my parents are my absolute rock. They're my back, my cheerleaders. They have been behind me from day one. And yes, there have been hard times when I have struggled with things that I wish I didn't have to struggle with. But now, you know, I have a great relationship with them, and they see me now as an adult. They see me as independent. They see me as someone who's got a wonderful career. And it's because they've believed in me and supported me and given me the wings to fly and make my own life. And on my wedding day, like literally when my dad walked me down the aisle, I think he was a bit like, he didn't want to let me go. He was like, no, no, no.
I have to say, your parents sound wonderful. They really do.
They're amazing.
They really do. And they've given you obviously the support to make you the person you are to allow you these opportunities.
Yeah.
It is brilliant to see, especially with what everything you've said about the experiences that you've had in life and that other people have had in life and that you've witnessed. Yeah. So to be able to see what your parents have been able to guide you into. I don't know, parents are best when they don't push you, but they just gently kind of give you a bit of direction. Huh?
Yeah.
Is that what you think?
Yeah.
I think really that's how I am with my own children.
Yeah. How many children do you have?
I have two children. My son is 19. He's nearly 20. My daughter is nearly 17 as well. So they're growing up fast. Yeah. And I feel they go to school. well, when they went to school, actually my son's at university now, but when they went to school, their teachers would say that they grew up watching me on the television. Their teachers grew up. It made me feel really old.
Oh, do you know what? Actually, I had Krishnan Gurumurthy on my podcast 2 weeks ago, and I had an interview with him. And I grew up watching him on Newsround. Yeah. And so I was a bit fangirly. I was like, I watched your Newsround as a little girl growing up, and now I'm interviewing you. Like, that seems really strange. But he was so lovely, so down to earth, so grounded. I absolutely adore him. And I'm hoping, I'm keeping my fingers crossed that Jon Snow's possibly interested.
Oh, so, John's a lovely man. Yeah. He would be more than interested to talk to you.
So
he's always a lovely man.
I've asked, I put the ask in, so now I'm just waiting to hear. So yeah, fingers crossed.
Well, I am crossing my fingers for you as well, Kira.
But no, thank you so much.
Before you go, we're just going to pick them. Hang in there.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I was going to say, can we get a screen grab?
Right, okay. Look into the camera here. Brilliant.
Okay, 1, 2, 3. Got it. Brilliant.
Superb. Kira, have a lovely, lovely day.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to Kira's Pink Sparkle Pod. Kira's Pink Sparkle Pod.
Thank you for listening, and check back soon for another exciting episode.
Hello, my name's John Andrews. I edited this edition of Kira's Pink Sparkle Pod, and I just wanted to quickly tell you about a radio show that I host for the learning disability community. It's fun, it's inclusive, and you can hear it on SurreyHillsRadio.co.uk, or just ask your smart speaker to play Surrey Hills Radio every Monday and every Thursday, 11 o'clock in the morning, for the Sunny Sessions, brought to you with the Sunny Bank Trust in Epsom.